Hello, welcome along to this week's episode of the Let's Get Running podcast. How is the Caramel Kid?
What? Caramel is all right. What's Sean saying?
He's doing all right. He's sitting on a sun lounger. It's 8:30 in Lake Maggiore in northern Italy, and the sun's still coming out. It's still nice. I'm getting bitten by loads of little flies and stuff. We hope this is recording. We're doing this on our phone, so I hope the quality is all right for everybody.
Well, I always do on my phone, but Sean usually has all the tech. But yeah, he's being ghetto. So
yeah, I can't lift that. I couldn't take it all with my baby stuff and that sort of stuff. So yeah, it's not with me. So hopefully you guys can hear this and it's good quality. But we'll see.
England is raining today.
Is it?
It's humid, but raining a lot.
You should see here. Oh, it's lovely. Just by the lake, by the water. It's nice. The water's nice and warm. It's good. Yeah. The only problem is,
Because you're there because you did a race, right?
Yeah. So what I was going to say, one thing is I forgot, like when you're a young man, holidays like this are amazing because you've got like late nights. Yeah, it's light till late. You can swim in the lake when it's dark and that sort of thing. What? When you've got a baby. Baby changes everything. You've got 2 hour windows to do stuff. So you've got 2 hours and they fall asleep. 2 hours and you've got to get them home to bed, and then we can't leave.
Dinner, wash, shower, and have sex in 2 hours. That's what you got to do.
Something like that. Yeah. But you're right, I was at a race. I did this race called the Tash Alp in Tash, which is like in Switzerland. It was near Zermatt. Not far from the Matterhorn, so like near this bigger mountain, but I couldn't see any of that shit because it was completely and utterly pissing it down with rain, like zero visibility. I was running like in a cloud. It was just you couldn't see anything, but it was I found it hard. It was 9K, right? And yeah, it was basically up most of the way. There's a couple of quite steep descents, which I was crap at actually, but there was one guy absolutely hooned it off at the beginning. He had a big lead by about 2K. And I was thinking, I felt like, you know, some days you just get up and it's just not your day. And I thought, oh God, this is not going so good. I slept basically because I'm trying to keep things cheap on top of, because obviously I had to keep the hotel here with the wife. I had to go and get a cheap hotel for me at this pass. So I was sleeping basically in a mosquito infested dormitory the night before. So I hadn't slept good. And it was the first couple of K, this guy absolutely blew my doors off, and I didn't realize until Martin told me afterwards, Martin, my coach, that he was already at 1,400 meters altitude. So obviously I'm going to be affected, because I drove up there like at 10 o'clock the night before, put my head down, got up in the morning, tried to run this race. So I was struggling for the first 2K, but then I got back and I got into the lead about 3K in, and then I just, you know, and sometimes when you're winning and you switch off, and I was climbing up, and I was climbing for ages, and it was tough. It was really technical stuff. I not really, I don't really know really technical stuff, but like quite a lot of switchbacks. And it was really steep, and I was climbing up, but I made a big lead, and then I just thought, all right, I've got this one now. I can just coast into the finish at about a kilometer and a half to go. And all of a sudden, I turned around with about 300 meters to go. And the guy behind me, Alex, I think he runs for Hoka One, or Hoka Owner. They call it Hoka Owner. So he's part of their team. And suddenly he was behind me and I had to absolutely smash it. So I had to smash the last 300 meters. I won by 22 seconds, but it was
really, so you went for 22 seconds in 300 meters.
Well, I think he wasn't that close. You know, I said this before in the last one, you know, in a mountain race, like,
they look close. Yeah.
Looks close, but it's not that close. So like I he gave me kittens and I was racing up this hill. So I've got some photos of me with proper gurn on in the last 300 meters trying to make sure I win this race. But yeah, but it was good. I can't complain. I won, but it wasn't that fun. I find it hard. I couldn't see anything.
When you was complaining, you said, it was all uphill. I was thinking, yeah, but you did a mountain race. Of course it's going to be uphill. then you said there was three really steep bits and I struggled. But you live in Holland and you've been doing treadmill. So don't give me sympathy on those things, you know?
Yeah. Don't ask for it. Yeah, I'm not asking. Yeah, it's stupid, really. But the week before, I did a really hard treadmill session that Martin set me. It was 5 times 5 minutes at 15%, right? And have you ever put the treadmill up to 15%?
Incline, yeah.
Yeah, so it's really hard. And I was doing 5 minutes of that about five, I think it's 5 minute 20K pace. Man, if you try and do that, that is really, really hard. I was doing that for, I think it was a two and a half, 3 minute rest at 5% incline, but whatever pace you want. But, oh man, it was, that was my session I did. It was absolutely, yeah, it was, it, I was, my legs were blown off. So I was ready for the steep sections, but it was, yeah, one of those days when you're just not on top form. So you got to be happy if you're not on top form and you still managed to win.
That was just the altitude, making you feel like heavy.
Yeah, I think so. And the worst thing is I'm off now to, on next Sunday, I'm running this race called the Tyon Dixent, which is, I've got to win, surely, with my name and that name, Dixon Dixent. But yeah, it's 2,000, I think, 2,000 meters. So I'm gonna be struggling really, because I'm going to the Thursday morning.
But you're the altitude now, so you get a little bit of effect. Now.
No, I'm not now. I'm because I went back down. So I'm at Lake Maggiore isn't altitude, I don't think so. Because we wanted to have a holiday with my wife, so it was better.
You know what?
To
get? Yeah.
What?
Not an altitude tent, because obviously the wife will say no. But you can get like a spaceman helmet. It's called an altitude bubble thing.
Do you know what I'm thinking of? I was wondering about this stuff.
Sleep. So you like, it's like a little bubble helmet you sort of put on your head. Yeah. Or as long as you're not claustrophobic, and obviously with a little generator, and it's like puts altitude in. Well, it doesn't put altitude, it just reduces the oxygen intake.
Okay. Have you tried it?
No, but basically this sounds like you put something overhead and you're trying to suffocate yourself.
Yeah. I'll just do it with a plastic bag, eh? Same job. Yeah,
I know people that used like altitude tents and they reckon it didn't work, but as soon as they got rid of the altitude tent, a couple of months later they were on amazing. So it's obviously you've got to take the effect of the altitude, you know, you've got to let it kick in. But it's too soon for the race because you won't have enough time.
No, isn't Charlie Grice the new British number hot, you know, 500 meter runner? He doesn't need some altitude tents. Like, as in he sells them or something like that. I don't know. I'm probably making that up, but I think he does. He has some kind of business selling altitude tents. But anyway, digressing. How are you doing though? How have you been?
Just working, busy, obviously crazy. Yeah. Usual crap. Some guy gets someone that will pull up to the stop. People get on. No, well, obviously waiting, doors are empty. No, they close the doors and always someone wants the bus. When I'm closing the doors, I'm thinking you've been standing there 5 minutes. He gets on, he's upset because I closed the doors and then I had to reopen them for him.
Yeah.
And he looks at me and goes, I know your type. And
yeah.
Travel. The bell, no one rings the bell. So obviously I just drive past the next stop and he comes up to me and says, you missed my stop. I said, no one rang the bell. He says, yes, I did. I said, no, you didn't. So I'm driving, obviously as I'm driving to the next stop, we're arguing.
Yeah.
And I said, trust me, you didn't ring the bell because I'd see it. He says, you know, stop it. And he goes, I know you, you're illegal, aren't you? You got illegal papers. So he's saying I was a legal immigrant. I was like, what? So now he's making me mad, right?
Yeah.
So I pulled into the next stop and people wanted to get on off and people were getting off.
Yeah,
but because he was arguing, he was at the front of the bus. He wanted to get off the front doors, and because I was mad, I said, so you ain't getting on the front doors. So I left the front doors closed, and he waited there because he knew people wanted to get on.
Yeah,
so we had a little standoff, and the people outside us waiting outside. And I just leant over, saw the people outside, and I said, "Oh, use the back doors." So all the people at the front walked down to use the back doors because I was thinking, once they get on, I'm going to close the doors and drive them to the next stop. Right, but he was like, he obviously figured out what I was gonna do and sprinted down the bottom of the bus and jumped off the back. I was thinking, that's what you get.
Don't be casting those aspersions at Jermaine.
Mate, man, saying I'm illegal. He says, where's my papers? So I was like, what?
I'm from Catford, don't you know?
I'm from the ends, you know.
But that brings us neatly onto our topic.
That's interesting.
We basically we've got two features on the show. So a few weeks ago, or probably a few months ago, we probably had this, the club focus feature. So we've done Leeds. We've kind of done the city of Leeds, and we did Serpentine before. So this week we're doing Glasgow Frontrunners. So Glasgow Frontrunners is a group. There's frontrunning groups across the whole of the world, basically. It started in America. It's a group for the LGBT community to come together, LGBT runners to come together and run together. They're a club. There's various different shades and formats of it. So a competitive club to just kind of more of a recreational group. So I talked to Jack from Glasgow Frontrunners, and we talked a bit about role models for the LGBT community. And he was talking about Tom Bosworth, obviously the race walker, who's openly gay, and if it made a difference to him and the LGBT community to have role models like that. And I was thinking,
Say it slowly.
So I was thinking as well, like, for me, being white and middle class, like, I think running is a white middle class sport, right? So I don't really have
long distances.
Long distances we're talking, yeah, not sprinting. So, I never looked at Liver Christie and thought me and that brother are the same. I never thought that, but but it's always... I haven't had to search out any role model. I haven't, like, because running is quite a middle-class white sport, male middle-class white sport, I guess. And I think I was checking out the statistics, and I looked at sort of the female participation is rising up. I think 49% I think it was a Sport England study that 49% of women are active, or as many women as many women are active as men. But one group that don't have much participation is like black and minority ethnic groups.
Only in England.
We're talking England here. We're not talking the world. I don't know if it's
best of this as well as in the world are all black because they're African.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, but we're talking. I think America might be a similar situation. But we're talking. The UK, Europe, like there's not that many. Like I think the England Athletics had a looked at all their registered athletes for I think it's 2008 for all registered athletes for distance running clubs, or might have been from all athletics clubs, and only 11% of those were black and minority ethnic, which is quite that's a low amount of people. And I don't know if you know, do you know Run Dem Crew? Have you heard of Run Dem Crew?
Run Dem Crew, yeah.
Yeah. So this is Charlie Darks, interesting guy. He set Run Dem Crew because there was I sent you an article, didn't I, about like black people don't do marathons. So if you go to they don't not do marathons, but there's less people doing it. There's less within England, English marathons, you see less black and minority ethnic people running marathons. And he set up Run Dem Crew because he wanted to kind of encourage more people, not just from the black and minority ethnic groups, but just more open, inclusive way of encouraging people to run. And I think that's quite a bold thing to do. But from obviously being caramel, do you mean? being mixed race. What did you have growing up when you started running? What did you think?
My race knowledge was bad. So right. I only did running because I was good at running. I wasn't like interested in running. So I didn't do no research. So I didn't know any world records, any British champions, world champions. So I wasn't interested in anyone older than me. I was only interested in the now. So the people I used to race against. So I was the same age as Mo Farah. So obviously Mo would stand up because obviously he's Somali, black. And then there was a few other people that were black or mixed race. And then that's it. But yeah, it's just like my age group, only sort of interested in my age group. But then when I was thinking about it just before, only other sort of black mixed race or minority sort of people, you've got Mark Cisse, Jason Lobo that both did the 800. You got Richard Nuruka that did, he got 10K. Yeah. Because apart from them, I can't really, Eddie Winter, but the steeplechaser, but I didn't really know about him obviously until I started doing steeplechase. So it's few and far between. And then, obviously, I know loads of other coaches that coached a minority. They obviously, they would know other, because they stand out.
Yeah,
especially
in
distance.
Yeah. And it's with Richard Nuruka, I think he's Indian. There's Indian, some kind of Indian heritage. The one group that has the lowest participation rate is Sikhs. So there's only like within the whole Sikh community, only 9.9% of Sikhs have engaged in like running in the last like month. So there is different groups that don't do like any running really. It's interesting. Like I don't know. It's an odd one. I like the fact that you've named all those people. Like I couldn't name. I don't know. I couldn't name that many. Like I off the cuff, I couldn't name that many. Do you know what I mean? So maybe it does resonate with you more without you even knowing it. Do you know what I mean?
I guess so.
Yeah, yeah. But it's not like it's not something that's like inspired you necessarily to run.
You know, it's different, and obviously different things motivate different people.
Yeah, that's true.
I was just interested in beating people, so obviously that's why I was only interested in people I was racing against. I wasn't worried about trying to beat these seniors that are running like 20 seconds quicker than me, because I was thinking they ain't running under 20, so under 17, so I don't need to worry about them, you know.
Yeah. But in your school, when you were like 12, 14, like in my school in Dorset, there wasn't any people of black and minority ethnic background. Do you know what I mean? It was a white school in Dorset. Like in your school, did you necessarily have people? Was it quite a multicultural school you went to?
Yeah, but not a lot of people did run in generally. Only people that wanted to skip class did run in.
Okay, all right.
Sports.
So there's a lot of people doing it.
Sports weren't big. It's like people did football and rugby, but that was about it. Running or athletics. And I was talking about some of this earlier. It's like you only get good sports in a secondary school if you've got good PE teachers or good teachers. Because if you don't have good teachers to coach the people, then it's just like general fitness. They're sort of teaching you.
Yeah. And that's really few and far between good PE teachers. But anyway, that's a different discussion. But it's interesting, like, because football, like the number of young, young black guys coming through in young Premier League teams and stuff. It's like, you know, Jadon Sancho and all these kind of young 18-year-old fellas. But like, there isn't like, I don't know whether there is actually true that why would you do running? It's not very well paid. There's no one there that you can have an affinity with. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's, I don't know. Maybe it is an issue that needs to be like addressed in that sort of way. But tell you what, Jermaine, we're not the people to address it.
Well, since like gay pride has been way more popular now. It's quite funny because people get upset because more people go that ain't gay.
Do they do?
I know in London, so there's people like, my sister's lesbian and she's like getting arsey about non-gays going. I'm like, well, what's the difference? I say, can everyone go in there celebrating, having fun? I say, it's just a bigger party.
Yeah. And that's what it is in the Netherlands over here. It's really like that the police have a big stand and stuff and everyone cheers the police stuff. It's just a big, big piss up for the weekend. Obviously, there is a side to it. It's like, you know, championing LGBT rights.
That people like playing football, people will wear the rainbow laces now, or loads of people are wearing the rainbow lanyards, you know, for their work passes. So people, they're sort of rocking it a bit more, you know?
Yeah. But it is strange that people still, there is not that many openly gay athletes.
The diver.
Tom Daly. Yeah. I suppose it is changing. You'd think it'd be changing to a greater degree now in 2019. But hey, I did ask Jack about Colin Jackson. It was a bit of a hard question to ask him because I know Colin Jackson didn't come out through his career. Now, that's in a different era. But he didn't feel like he could come out when he was competing, so I felt bad for like landing on Jack, but yeah interesting. But perhaps we'll listen to Jack and see what he has to say about, firstly, about Glasgow Frontrunners. If you want to get involved with Glasgow Frontrunners or the frontrunning community, if you're a listener, then have a listen to Jack. And after, I forgot to say, we've got a second little interview, which is we've reignited Injury Corner.
Reignited.
Yeah. So we've got a little chat with Scott Newton, physio from the Running Works in London. He worked at various different practices, but I think he's mostly based there. That's his little hub. So I think he's called the Running Physio Online. If you search that, you'll find Scott. I know he treats a lot of good guys, so have a listen to that. But he talks to us about shin injuries. So talks a bit about how to minimise any damage and how to get away from those issues. Have you had shin problems before?
I've had a stress fracture in the shin, but it wasn't running related.
Right.
Obviously, I was in South Africa. We were doing really good training. And no, that was on the knee. And one of my friends, well, he's the doctor of UK Athletics now. Noel Pollock, doctor of UK Athletics now. Well, so we're all in. He goes, oh, he sees a post on the wall. Let's go quad biking. Yeah. So me, Noel Pollock, Andrew Dunwoody, we go quad biking. And Andrew's trying to do a wheelie, falls off the back. Right, quad bike's still going. He falls off the back. So it's an absolute nightmare. And then, like, Noah's going in the bush, he falls in prickle bushes, like proper thorns the size of your finger, right? So we were all over the place, and I was thinking, I didn't get into trouble because I was being fairly sensible. And then there was like these big humps, so I was thinking, let me get some big air. So I went to get some big air, and I wasn't holding the steering tight enough, so I went over a little bump and just went straight up a tree. And I fell off, and obviously I landed funny, and my leg hurt. And then when I got back to England, because this was a couple of days, when I got back to England, I kept running, and just felt like I had a bruise in my shin, and really bad. And obviously I got a scan, and they said, oh, you got a stress fracture. So obviously, blooming stress fracture.
Jesus, this is a UK Athletics camp.
No, this was a Jermaine Mays training group based camp.
With the UK Athletics doctor.
No, he wasn't the doctor at the time, but he is now. But yeah, that cost me the Commonwealth Games that day, because I qualified, but I couldn't compete. Man,
oh,
I was.
No, man.
But you know, that's what you do when you're stupid.
Yeah. There's a lesson for all young runners out there. Stay away from quad bikes. Well, if you do go on a quad bike, stay away from air. Don't do the airs. Don't do the big airs. You'll land in a tree. So you got it sorted then. It meant you'd have to have time off.
Yeah, I missed the whole summer. So
I see.
That's the season. For me, summer was the season, so that was my season done.
Oh, Jesus. What a shame. I feel sorry for you now, Jermaine. I'm shedding a tear here now.
Please.
I've never had any, but I'll have a little niggle in the shin every now and again, but usually I can manage it. It's usually I've usually not changed my shoes in a while, or I've just been doing a bit too much heavy stuff and stuff, but usually I can manage it. But Scott's going to give us more insightful interest on how to avoid those shin pains. But
interestingly, so you know, like, I stopped running and then I get back into running. I hadn't run before 3 or 4 months, and then when I start try to run again, my shin will hurt at the top, you know, like the shin below the knee.
Yeah.
And it's almost like you just need to toughen up that bone.
Yeah.
You have to sort of on off running, and then it goes away. That's a weird problem.
Yeah. I think it's a lot with that with shins, isn't it? Like you can't, stopping is not exactly going to help out. That's what I think anyway. Scott will probably say something completely different, but if you stop completely, almost you're not building the strength up that you need to the loading you need to improve to start running again. But hey, let's listen to Scott and we'll come back after with a quick outro. Oh no, we'll listen to Jack first, then Scott come next. Here we go. On today's show, I'm talking to Jack Kelly from Glasgow Frontrunners. How you doing, Jack?
I'm fine, thank you.
So you're part of the Glasgow Frontrunners. What is your role with the group?
I am the secretary of Glasgow Frontrunners, so obviously that's involved the managing the membership. We are a club of the size of 177, which I think in terms of LGBT focused clubs, that is the largest kind of sports LGBT sports club in Scotland.
Wow.
And I think in terms of the frontrunners, we are second to London. We've got quite a healthy group.
How long have you been going with the frontrunners?
I have been going personally to the frontrunners probably from around about 2013.
Yeah.
Frontrunners are very much, you know, the people that have made me the runner that I am today.
Yeah. And what sort of stuff do you do then? What's your focus in terms of your running?
I'm mainly focused on marathons. When I say this, I feel almost slightly embarrassed by it. I've done now 16 marathons, and I'm currently training for the Chicago Marathon in October.
Nice. So how are the Glasgow Frontrunners, how they improved your running? What was it about the group that made you sort of
take it a bit more seriously?
The way we organise the club is that there are three main run nights. The main run night is a Thursday night, which has a groups of 5Ks, 7.5Ks, and depending on pace, maybe, and depending on numbers, they're around between 2 and 3 10K groups.
Yeah.
So I found myself, you know, gravitating towards the faster group in recent months, which goes between a 45 and 50 minute 10K.
Yeah.
We also have a similar run on the Sunday, similar runs on a Sunday. And then what we've developed, our predecessors have done in the last couple of years, is developed a training night on the Tuesday, which I'm going to touch on later. And that's really about a training session. There are 3 or 4 registered coaches. So they'll do a cycle of kind of hill sessions, sprints and interval sessions, and some core work.
Okay, great.
So that's something that's helped me. And one other aspect of which is focused a lot on the Sunday, which certainly has helped my training, is that we run kind of training groups aimed towards working towards either marathons or half marathons. And that's something that I've become more involved in, been in the last 2 to 3 years. And it's been the one of the influences as to why, or contributing factors as to why my times have improved significantly.
Yeah. And would you say a marathon focused club? Is it more, do you guys do a range of different events, or is it mainly focused on the roads?
Yeah, it's an interesting question. I think I would probably say if you spoke to various members, they would probably have different perspectives about what the club is aimed to do. It's probably, if it's the right word, a hybrid of different things. There are people come for different reasons. There are people come, we have a Couch to 5K plan, for instance, that we normally run in January, and we see people coming through that and actually going right the way through to marathons.
Yeah.
Whereas people would just do that to get fit. Some people are happy just going at that 5K level. Others are maybe focused on the 10K and half marathon groups. And others, you know, as I say, are running on towards marathons. It's a kind of goes between very much, which I'll maybe kind of detail later, what the front runners kind of ethos is, or our, I mean, is that there's a certainly a social aspect to it.
Yeah.
You know, of being supportive of runners from the LGBT community. So some people will like that aspect of it, whereas others, I think, that in comparison to what I understand of other front runner clubs through Britain, there are some of our group who are very much focused in and more serious running, but probably not as much as maybe some that I understand in maybe Newcastle or London, who are very much involved in the amateur athletics scene, which we don't necessarily get too involved in.
Yeah, and thinking about the sort of runners, is there much of a connection between the different runners across the country? Is it almost like a wider club, or do you very distinct in your kind of your?
I think in terms of the way that the clubs will run themselves, I think that you'll certainly, my opinion is that you'll find differing perspectives in how the clubs are run. As I see, some will maybe have a social more kind of aspect to it. Yeah. Others will maybe highlight almost the kind of social justice and a kind of campaigning aspect to an extent. I would probably refer to our colleagues in Edinburgh, who have been very good in the forerunner of getting the non-binary categories being established in Scottish athletics.
Yeah.
So you have that, and then there's other clubs like London, which I think has around about 500 members, who will have, you know, very much involved in, I take it, the amateur athletics scene and track stuff. So,
yeah.
So you have different some different, but at the same time, there is, I would say, a fairly good connection. I mean, most of the clubs, I think there are 8 all in front runner clubs in Britain, will have a kind of landmark race, there is a healthy involvement in all of them. You know, just 2 quick examples. I was down myself with a group of 12 from Glasgow to the Newcastle LGBT run. last Friday, the 19th of July, which had a lot of involvement from the local community and the local running clubs. And we ourselves are very much working towards our kind of landmark run, which is called Outrun, which is taking place August the 17th. And we will have a good representation from the other clubs, the other front runner clubs in Britain.
And that's up in Glasgow, that run?
Glasgow, Kelvin Grove Park, if anybody's interested. It starts at 9:30 on the 17th of August. There's a T-shirt, cakes, and we also, we'll have some events for front runners throughout the day.
Yeah, fantastic. And do you know much about the history of front runners? Do you know how long Glasgow itself has been running? And do you know
that? I actually did a kind of thing recently for Scottish Athletics, and it was quite good that I linked in with some of our founder members.
Yeah.
So it helped me get some understanding of the kind of ethos and the basis of it.
Yeah.
Frontrunners, as a running organisation, I think was based in America. There's a book I think called Frontrunners, which was where the name was taken from. And I think it was very much established within America. There are strong groups, I think, in New York and Chicago, for instance, and other main cities. And then it developed into Europe. And I think that what we had was around, it was, I think it was 2010 and 2011, a small group of runners, you know, kind of serious runners, but not necessarily involved in any kind of organized group.
Yeah.
We're aware of front runners from visiting other countries and other cities, and decided to set up a front runner group in Glasgow.
Right.
Started in 2011. They very much got support from Jog Scotland and Scottish Athletics, as well as maybe linking into other front runners clubs to establish it. And I think they started. The usual move of about 5 or 6 runners, you know, to where we're at today. And I think it was born out of probably the needs of the recognition of having a running club, which was kind of focused. It's open to everyone, front runners, I would stress.
Yeah.
But very much, you know, kind of the emphasis in the LGBT community.
Yeah.
And I would maybe mention 2 kind of, I suppose, hobby horses of mine, and I know in some members of the club, is it's a recognition that, you know, people from the LGBT community, you know, maybe have felt ostracised in terms of sports in the past.
Yeah.
Maybe often going to school and not feeling part of the sports community, and this would give them an opportunity to develop as an athlete and as a sports and getting fit.
Yeah.
Also, in terms of the LGBT community, there's a research which suggests that there is some aspects that could be in there, that people are getting into unhealthy lifestyles. And one particular strong point of me is that I think that a strong theme is the link between mental health, the LGBT community, and that how fitness, health and running helps with that. I know I was involved in a wee kind of project last year, and it made me look at some of the very troubling statistics of the high instances of mental health and sadly suicide and suicidal ideation among the LGBT community. And I'm certainly not going to say that front runners or running will totally resolve people's mental health difficulties or issues, but I think it would certainly help, and I would personally say it's certainly helped me.
Yeah, absolutely.
From where I was in 2013 to where I am now.
Yeah, absolutely, because the evidence is compelling, isn't it, for the benefits of regular exercise. Is it hard to kind of to reach out and then publicise front runners on that count, so people who might be suffering from depression? How do you guys kind of, it's a difficult question to ask, shocked with it, but how do you kind of try to appear? What sort of projects did you run to try and bring people in who might be suffering from that?
It was just really an awareness kind of raising kind of thing that we did, and I wouldn't say that was particularly a major kind of focus. It was just something that we had done in the past, but I think it's just a kind of strong recognition. You know, I think if you see certainly some social media kind of posts and stuff that our members are in, we can see that it's certainly something that, that a lot of our members as a strong team, they've recognised that, that, that how running has improved and helped their mental health. In terms of how we publicise Frontrunners, you know, we obviously have, you know, Facebook is a very much a main way of getting kind of through that. We'll have, you know, we will do that. We'll highlight things through kind of Facebook. We'll have, obviously, we have various kind of runs and our Couch to 5K is maybe a good avenue through that. Where we're saying is this is a good way of getting kind of backing into to running and fitness. There's maybe, in terms of answering your question, there's no maybe an explicit thing to say. I don't think that we think it's a particularly great idea to say, right, well, now we'll sit down and discuss issues around about mental health or that. But it's just that there's a welcoming atmosphere. We certainly, it's certainly a big point to me is that if people are coming to the club, I know that when I came to the running club, I would maybe be at the corner of the concourse that we meet in, and thinking, right, okay, I'm not looking to kind of speak to anyone or you know, just keep myself to myself. And gradually I became more involved and more integrated, and I think we see that time and again in people that come into the club. So it's keen that I know certainly some of my predecessors that were involved are very much kind of important in thing, that there are people coming for the first time, that they feel welcome, that, you know, we're not in their face to say, you know, we want to hear what you're past history is or anything, but basically what there is here we are, you're coming to the running club, we're here to run, we'll be friendly and supportive. And time and again we see that that works, because we see people coming in, you know, maybe not knowing anybody, and sometimes that they've got a group of friends, they're coming to the social events that we have and are very much involved in the running of the club.
Yeah, excellent. And the next kind of question I'm thinking, like, because there is a distinct world of participation coming along and improving mental health and that sort of thing, and also a world of competition. But where did Glasgow sit in that? Where's kind of your main focus? And do you kind of straddle both of those worlds, let's say?
Yeah, I mean, I think, as I maybe tried to touch on earlier, I think in terms of competition, and certainly in terms of the local amateur athletics scene, we're not really involved in, shall we say, going to the kind of cross country events that would have that. Our kind of focus would be, in terms of running, is that if people are, you know, there are kind of a steady group of runners who will use the club, you know, maybe to get into, whether to get into other kind of races, but certainly working towards, you know, the kind of standard events of marathons and half marathons.
Yeah.
So people will maybe go off and do their own thing and you know, maybe like I say, we'll do other kind of marathons. But what we try and do is organise training plans around about two half marathons a year and two marathons a year. Yeah. One being maybe a more local one, and then another one being an international trip. And we'll try as much as we can, although I'll be honest, sometimes it's easier said than done to organise, the trips that everybody will buy into. Okay. We'd maybe try some, but you know, a lot of the the marathons are now what they call festivals. So they'll have various races. They'll have 10Ks, half marathons and marathons. So that means that it can be open to a wider group of the club. Yeah. I mean, an example is recently the one that we targeted was actually the one quite local, was the Edinburgh Marathon Festival. Mm. And I think we counted probably around about 27 odd runners and supporters that were involved over the weekend. There was a 10K, for instance, on the Saturday, and then a half marathon and marathon on the Sunday. And again, it was quite emotional because there were people who were doing marathons for the first time and runs for the first time, for their own reasons, and to hear those stories and to see people accomplish that was really quite rewarding and reassuring.
Yeah, and I don't know if you personally have experience of running outside of the front runners. Like, running's is a funny sport because kind of it can be quite welcome. It's quite inclusive. There's plenty of opportunities to do it, but at the same time, it can be, it's a bit stuck in the past. And I've certainly felt, even like when I first joined clubs, it takes a while to kind of people to open up and be friendly. And I don't know, what do you think about the experience? Do you think outside the front, it is quite a closed sport?
Yeah, I think I would. It's just my own personal opinion. I would tend to agree that. I would give the example is that I think, well, certainly front runners has been running in Glasgow for well now 7 or 8 years. I mean, I don't think we see ourselves as being kind of, a lot integrated into the kind of local, running community. We have a kind of race calendar and people go to running events, but they're normally round about 10Ks and half marathons that are organised, but not from the necessarily from the, shall we say, the local clubs. We have relatively good links with Scottish Athletics and good links, I have to say, with Jog Scotland, who link in with us regularly and are very supportive, and they have an outreach worker who comes to all of our recognised events. So we have good links, but I would say, it's probably on both sides. We could probably, if we have a strong group of people who are interested, we could probably do more in being involved in it.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I see what you're saying, in terms of the running community reaching out, it probably from the outside looking in, it looks a wee bit closed.
Yeah. And thinking, I was talking to Jan, who's one of your members, who I used to live near back in London. And he was talking about sort of the work that and the spotlight that Tom Bosworth has shone upon LGB athletes and LGB causes. Does it matter to have people at the top level of sport who are shedding light on issues that affect the LGBT community?
I think absolutely it does. My own opinion, I think absolutely it does. It does matter. I think, as I say, I think as all as runners, you see that there's almost that kind of what you do, it inspires and affects other people. And I think for people coming into running, certainly from the LGBT community, if they would see that runners that are comfortable with their sexuality or accepted, then that will inspire and help them and assist people. So to see people, such as that, both from running and other sports, I think is really good and really important, And I can't think specific examples, but I certainly hear sometimes people talking about that in a very positive light, of runners and seeing that from the LGBT community who are doing well and the inspiration that has for people within our club and within front runners generally.
Yeah, and I mean, it's still kind of, I guess, we think it's 2019. Obviously, we think we're in a totally inclusive, open society, but then I think there was recently Colin Jackson who came forward and said that he wouldn't come out during when his career. Does that have any effect? I guess it doesn't really affect your enjoyment of the sport, but do you feel negatively about those kind of things coming out?
What do you mean in terms of?
Do you think perhaps like it perpetuates the kind of the almost whether he was embarrassed about as a runner being also gay. Do you think that's does it make a difference? I suppose it doesn't affect you whatsoever, but is that bad for the promotion, I guess, of
I think that people recognise that there's still a way to go in terms of for the LGBT community to be fully accepted, and I think that and hearing stories such as that, it will strike resonance with many people, both in their own personal experiences and their experiences as in trying to get into sport. And again, it might be the reason why people would be put off thinking, getting into sport. I mean, as I say, that's maybe one of the things about the club, as it is LGBT focused, so that people who are from the LGBT community will hopefully feel comfortable coming along and know that they'll be accepted. Whereas it is possible, and I'm certainly not making any criticism or anything, but it is possible, I think, that some stigma and some issues may be encountered by people than going to other running clubs.
Yeah, absolutely. So thinking, kind of like wrapping up, kind of almost like an advert for Glasgow Frontrunners. What makes it special? What's like your ethos, and why should new runners come along and join you guys for your training sessions?
They should come along because it's a strong group of runners, not only from the LGBT community, from people who want to come, who find it. Our consistent feedback is that it's a relaxed, comfortable, and friendly environment, and that people coming along will be supported in terms of their running and all accepted in terms of their own personal situation, and will find it friendly, and I think we'll establish good kind of friends when they come along.
Yeah.
So I think for people, as we said earlier, whether they're struggling with their mental health, whether they're unfit, there are some unhealthy aspects of their lifestyle, I think that they could find a good place in coming along, because we could certainly see numerous examples of people who have came unfit. I mean, I personally could tell you that I've lost 4 stone in the last 4 or 5 years at least.
Wow.
And coming regularly, consistently to a club where you feel accepted and supported, will help people.
Didn't you say your PB is jumped by over an hour?
I think I first done my marathon. Actually, I was relatively fit there, probably around 12, 13 years ago.
Yeah.
And my PB was around 4:08, and it's now,
perfect. 3:20. So. A good advert. Certainly worked for you, Jack.
Yes.
Yeah. And good luck with your forthcoming Chicago marathon. Hopefully you'll
Thank you.
Yeah. One thing I should do, I was about to leave without asking you 3 quick fire questions that we should ask to all of our guests. They are, the first one is, if you could be anywhere running now, where would it be?
In terms of a race, I would love to be running in the London Marathon.
Lovely.
If anywhere.
Yeah.
I've had various attempts getting in and it's found it difficult, so it's my kind of goal to get the time to do that.
Perfect. Second question is, can you recommend us something? So it could be an inspiring book you've recently read, could be a movie, film, or even just an experience you think all our listeners should try.
I'm reading a book called Endurance at the moment by...
Oh, yes.
I think his name is...
Alex Hutchinson.
Yes. So, yeah. And I'm finding it quite good in terms of the mental side of running and endurance. So maybe I'll recommend that. I've not completed it, but I'm finding it very interesting and compelling.
Yeah, it's a good one. I've read it. Very good. And the final question is, what in your opinion is the greatest endurance performance of all time?
I think, I probably just have to highlight being part of it. I actually done the Berlin Marathon last year, I think, and it being such a great sport, I think Kipchoge's times are quite phenomenal. I think that is better, I would say, all time. And I think I grew up with my father talking about Zatopek and other runners, and I think they mark as the greatest of all time. The fact that they doing different races, so I'd probably highlight that as being the best. But certainly Kipchoge currently is a person that I would get a lot of inspiration from.
Fantastic. Well, great stuff. Well, good luck with the training, and fingers crossed you run a new PB in Chicago.
Yeah, we'll see. But we'll be.
Yeah. Excellent. Thanks, Jack.
Bye. Okay, thank you. Cheers.
So we're back on Injury Corner with Scott Newton. How are you doing, Scott?
Yeah, I'm well, thanks. Thanks, Sean. Yeah, thanks for having me on again.
Good to have you. We didn't mention before, like when we talked about, where you're practicing and that sort of thing, you are running yourself with a PB of a current PB of 2:36?
Oh, nice. 2:37 for the marathon and 74 for the half.
Nice. And we're recording this before the Amsterdam Marathon, so if that's already happened.
Hopefully I might have whittled it down to 2:36 at least by then, so yeah.
And this week we're going to be talking about shin pain. So I used the word shin splints earlier. I don't know if that's the technical term for any pain related to the shins, but Is there a technical term for shin pain, or is shin splints good enough?
I guess most people sort of know what you mean when you say shin splints. Technically, there are some sort of more wordy, more medicalized terms. So medial tibial periostitis. That essentially is referring to where you get sort of traction and inflammation at the border where some of the muscles in your lower leg attach onto the border of your shin, what we call the periosteal sort of junction there.
Yeah.
Now, couple of sort of different incarnations clinically. Sure. Yeah.
Okay. And obviously the I was gonna say what are the symptoms is pretty clear, but what how do we know that because obviously every now and again I'll get a little niggle in my shin or that's all that sort of thing. How do we know that's a problem that we should get treated? What's the warning signs we should be looking out for with any shin pain?
With shin pain, I guess like a lot of other sort of running related injuries, that anything which is sort of becoming more and more sort of present when you're running or has a hangover after a run, you know, that day or the following morning, you know, I think that can certainly be a symptom that that you need to sort of pay attention to.
Yeah.
At the more extreme end of things, if you're ever getting to the point where you're sort of having to sort of, you know, the pain during a run with if you like medial tibial stress syndrome, will quite often it will ease during a run and then maybe feel a bit sore afterwards. But if you're getting into a run and the pain just builds and builds and builds to the point where maybe you're limping or you feel you can't continue, you know, that latter situation, it's a bit of a red flag that might be not a definite, but it might indicate there's maybe some element of bone stress and that sort of starts on a continuum which can sort of culminate in a complete sort of stress fracture.
So the inflammation, if untreated, can lead to that a actual bone problem. It's important to snap it. It can do.
It won't for the vast majority of people, but if you just ignore things, run through it, ignore the fact you're limping and things like that, that's where you're really going to run into problems.
Okay. And if we came along to, first of all, think about how we can try and deal with it ourselves. Well, can you deal with it yourselves? Can you sort the problem out at home?
Yeah. The first steps are pretty simple potentially. So, you know, aside from, you know, if you're limping, you're having any problems putting weight through a limb, then that's something where I say, you know, don't try and sort it out at home. You need to go and get that sort of checked out medically, you know, with a qualified physio or GP, you know, and don't sort of mess around with that if there's suspicion of bone injury. For those, you know, where it's just more of a niggle, then I think one of the first things is to just to sort of back off the aggravating factors. Probably will mean, you know, reducing your running volume. You know, it's really just trying to find sort of the, you know, if you have got, if you're like a safe volume of running that you can do without aggravating symptoms, fine, continue. But there will almost definitely be a reduction in running or a complete abstinence of running if there's no amount of running you can do without aggravating.
Yeah.
Other things are really, really sort of tight through your calf muscle. So a quick check of that could be doing a knee to wall test. So and that's where you keep your heel pressed down, then you have your big toe, let's say 5 centimeters away from the wall. And if you can't very comfortably get your knee to the wall, keeping your heel down, then you're probably tight through there. So if you're really tight through your calf muscles and things like that, do some basic calf stretches. That's important. If you've got very worn sort of running shoes, particularly if you've a tendency to sort of roll in at the ankle, so to pronate a lot, then it might be worth having a bit of an MOT on your running shoes and maybe even thinking about using an off-the-shelf orthotic to help just control that movement a little bit. And you know, generally speaking, when you are trying shoes out or any orthotics, If you're able to run in them in a shop, you'll soon get an idea as whether they feel comfortable or not. As well. So comfort's a good guide for those sort of things. Yes, I think you need to back off training, potentially do some non-impact cross training if you can't run, stretch the calf muscles out, and you know, if there's any sort of, you know, really sort of severe pain, get it checked out without delay.
Fantastic. And as it's kind of, it is an impact injury, is there things you can do again with running form to ward off the likelihood that you get shin pain? Is there any kind of
ideas? Good question. Absolutely. So we know there are quite a few sort of big studies in military populations, because a lot of new military recruits get problems with shin pain and stress fractures and medial tibial stress syndrome. So we know that people that have a tendency to be quite heavy footed when they run and land, where the vertical loading rates are quite high, there's a tendency to kind of to have an increased disposition to this type of injury. So trying to do things like, if you are very sort of loud when you're listening to your footfall, and if you feel very heavy on your feet, trying to be lighter and quieter when you run, that can certainly be a very simple thing, literally just being very mindful of those two things. So sometimes we find that people that maybe tend to sort of overstride or maybe have a running form which doesn't encourage sort of good sort of hip glute mechanics and things like that, that can contribute. So having a little bit of a broader look at running form, which I think really requires a little bit of sort of one-to-one, you know, either with a physio or even a running coach, to be perfectly honest, just have a look at what's sort of going on with sort of the mechanics, particularly around the hips, so you can maybe get big, strong gluteal muscles doing a little bit more work than the lower leg muscles, if that's relevant.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think there's sort of a few things we can look at in terms of sort of running form and so on there that Excellent. Can be helpful.
Yeah. And how, as a physio, how do you treat problems of the shin? Obviously, stress factors are a different matter altogether, but how would you treat someone that came in with a shin issue?
Come with a shin issue, I guess the first thing that I want to differentiate from is, do I think this is more the sort of medial tibial stress, this medial tibial periostitis?
Yeah.
So the more sort of soft tissuey kind of version of things, or is it a bone stress injury?
Yeah.
If it's the latter, I might be more inclined to look at referring them on to see a sports doctor like Cass Spencer-Smith, who you've interviewed in the past, to get the diagnosis confirmed, you know, and occasionally people need to be sort of put into those lovely ear cast boots and so on for a while to manage it. You know, that's you know, thankfully not the majority of cases.
Yeah.
For most people, then it's, you know, getting them on board with reducing the aggravating factors, then looking at their biomechanics and so on. So are they really tight in the calf? Do they, you know, are they massively flat-footed, and maybe do they need to consider, you know, sort of adjusting footwear to give them a little bit more support?
Yeah.
Are they tight or restricted in any other muscle groups that might then impact on their running form? So
yeah,
you see quite a lot of people horrendously tight sort of through the hip flexors, and they can't sort of actually sort of extend their hip.
Yeah.
And it means that they can't really recruit glutes very well to get good sort of hip drive and things like that. So, you know, there might be other sort of bits, if you like, in the kinetic chain, if you like, which need to kind of be sort of addressed away from the shin.
Yeah.
In terms of like sort of things that sometimes help with a bit more like local treatment, so sometimes some painful sort of stripping massage down the periosteal border.
Yeah, that's a nice new word, periosteal border. I like it.
So that can sometimes be helpful. It normally, you know, takes a good sort of 2 or 3 sessions, and patients that need to just be aware that he can sometimes result in a lot of bruising, which sounds awful, doesn't it? But it is one of those things where it does seem to work quite well.
Yeah.
Sometimes taping, so we try and compress, if you like, try and reduce the traction, if you like, on the tib post, posterior tibial muscles can help. Patients anecdotally seem to find compression sleeves to be helpful. So, you know, they're certainly worth a try. And also sort of dry needling sometimes can be useful techniques, just try and reduce sensitivity and reduce tension in that area.
Yeah, okay. Okay. It sounds like shins are a bit of a pain in the arse thing. Is it a hard thing to get rid of? Is it once it's established? I guess a stress factor is really tough to get rid of, but
Yeah, you know, and almost, it's bizarre, sometimes stress fractures, you know, after you've done your time in the boot, you know, just get better. Yeah. And then you just have to be sensible about sort of how you build things back up again in terms of your training.
To deal with the impact, if you just completely back off again and hope that it goes away, you need to address the problems that are causing this shin pain, as opposed to just rest isn't necessarily the best course of action with this. For beginner runners,
I can see the logic in that. Yeah, that you know, there's probably a role for sort of relative rest, or like adjusting things so you're not going out and running and hurting, you know, worse after each run. You know, because that's not going to end well, I think.
Yeah, okay.
But then, yeah, you need to make sure that you're paying attention to things like, you know, is it running form? Is it the fact you're tight? Is it the fact you're a little bit sort of weak in the sort of more proximal muscles around the hip, thigh, and means you're overloading the lower leg and things like that.
Yeah.
So you need to have a look at those other things. And rest alone won't address all of that. So I'd agree with that.
Yeah. And the last thing is with the old school diagnosis, stick a bit of ice on it. Are those days gone? Do we ice shins anymore if they're painful?
It's a good analgesic. Sometimes it's more helpful than others, but it's certainly one of those things where it's very much worth giving it a try. You know, providing you're not putting ice directly on your skin for, you know, more than sort of 20 minutes at a time, you're very, very unlikely to do yourself any harm, and it might well make it feel a little bit better. And if there is, it's certainly worth trying that.
Yeah. Okay. Wicked. Excellent. Well, hopefully that won't affect anyone. Hopefully this is all just us talking and it's not actually anyone suffering shin injuries, but
that'd be ideal.
But we know that they do, so hopefully that's useful to everybody, and hopefully we're going to catch up again soon, Scott.
Great.
Nice.
Thanks
one.
For having me on, Sean.
Thanks, man.
Okay, have a great day. Take care.
Bye. Bye.
So nice couple of interviews there with the guys. Nice to hear Jack's thoughts and his plug for Glasgow Frontrunners and the stuff they're doing up there in Glasgow. So yeah, nice. And hopefully we'll be able to all avoid shin injuries in the future.
Yes.
Yeah, no going on quad bikes anyway. But hey, we've got no reviews. I can't check them when I'm out here in the land of Italy, the land of pasta and pizza. So we can't do reviews, but we can say we do like reviews. So if you can give us a review anywhere that you get this, your
we'll give you big boy shout-outs.
Yeah, we'll do that. We'll do it whenever we get them. We'll give them, and also we'll give big shout-outs to those who donate.
We have even a big donation this week. For that.
Bigger, yeah.
Kiss and a cuddle, we'll be able to see them.
Yeah. It's letsgetrun.co.uk/podcast. Yeah, so if you want to get involved with that, that's really nice of you. You buy us a little espresso, which I love. I'm drinking a lot of those out here.
Coffee is good,
yeah, very nice. But I'm running this weekend, so I'm gonna next time we catch up next Wednesday, we'll have a report of the show. It's a big race. It's called the Tie on Dixent, and I think it's won by Kenyans 10 miles in about 60 minutes. So you can imagine it's not an easy race, but it's not that hard either. It's not like it's not a massive climb. By the way, just next to me is like if you can hear that behind me, it's a big, like, you know those tourist kiddies trains just gone past me and started ringing its bell. So if you can hear that, sorry about that, everybody. But yeah, so I'll let you know about what happens next weekend, and we'll have a chat. But we'll catch up then. Nice one.
See ya. Bye. Bye.
Bye.